Hello, welcome to Roots Runners Rhizomes, Health and Healing from the Underground. I'm Sarah Faulkner.
And I'm Lauren Gembroni. This is our first show in our new time slot every fourth Thursday of the month.
This show remains dedicated to exploring healing and wellness from a liberatory perspective, critiquing top-down systems and institutions.
Instead, we look up and around from below and alongside the way roots and rhizomes grow.
Our show has not been evaluated by the FDA or any official licensing body, and our intention is not to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease on the air.
By providing discussion, critique, and information from a variety of viewpoints, we hope you'll feel more empowered, informed, and resourced as you explore your own options for self-care and working with different practitioners around town.
Today's show is about sound and listening and healing. And we'll be talking and listening with C. Lavender, who's in the studio. Hey, welcome
Hi.
To the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming. So Lavender's an experimental musician and artist currently living in Hudson, New York. In her work, she seeks to create a heavily physical experience for the listener through utilizing various high and low frequency instrumentation. She's also an intern for Pauline Oliveros, the Deep Listening Institute, and has toured in the groups Cock, ESP, and Laundry Room Squelchers. And we'll repeat this again at the end, but her website is clavender.net. And anyway, so Lavender's here to talk with us about music, sound, healing, therapies. She's going to also play tracks for us, some of her own compositions and some pieces by her teachers and influences and things she finds interesting and personally helpful. So, and if we have any time, Lauren and I are also going to talk a little bit generally about listening and ear health. But
welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thanks, thanks for having us. Hi. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So, Lavender, can you tell us a little bit about your music and how you came to it?
Sure. I guess I would say I'm an experimental musician, kind of run the gamut of things, but a lot of what kind of ended up drawing me there was I had a big interest in punk music for a long time, but I still could never quite find bands that seemed to be doing what I wanted to hear. And it was also hard to find people to be in bands with that had interesting ideas. Like, usually a band sort of starts out like, oh, we want to sound like Jesus and the Mary Chain and Gigi Allen. Go. Like, let's work with that. But I wanted to find more fluid improv type things.
And how did you become a musician too? Like, did you decide you just wanted to start playing music, or did you have training as a kid, or did your family support that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I had a little bit of training when I was a kid. Started with saxophone in school band. My mom still asked me if I bring that up. And like every day, like, oh yes, I'm a trained saxophonist when I was 9.
So you started when you were 9 years old?
Yeah, around 9. And then maybe around 11, started taking guitar lessons and did that for about 5 years, studied music theory in high school. And then after that, it just sort of grew. Mm-hmm. Where then I started picking up bass and just fiddling with instruments, fiddling with keyboards. So eventually it just got to a point where I allowed myself to be a one-woman band pretty much, where I was like, oh wait, I can play all these different things and I have all this various mild training. I can just hone all this in, especially with the, you know, use of computers and recording to tape and all these different technologies that exist out there that make it easy for people to produce music on their own, mm-hmm. not need a whole band.
Are you pretty much self-taught in that stuff, or is that stuff you've studied?
Yeah, I've definitely had friends help me here and there and just done research and things, but it just seems to be really fluid. Like, I had a computer since I was 12, so uh-huh. it just feels really fluid and natural to be able to kind of figure that stuff out.
Awesome. So, I interrupted you to talk about your history of musical training, early musical training. Sure. So I guess, so you got into the punk scene.
Sure. Yeah. And
after this kind of initial more classical or formal training? And then what kinds of folks were you collaborating with then? Were there people who were self-taught as well?
For the longest time, I pretty much just worked on my own. Mm-hmm. Played in and out of some experimental groups like the ones you mentioned in the beginning, Laundry Room Squelchers and things like that. But that's, you know, sort of a one-off thing. I admittedly still haven't really been in a band. Mm-hmm. Still really, I've never done that. So, but working on it soon.
It's interesting too, because certain, for want of a better word, genres of music, like punk, it's often, you know, always collaborative and you're doing work in bands, but that's not, you know, not everyone is the same, right? And some folks want to do their project. I mean, I'm an artist and sometimes I collaborate and sometimes I'm all by myself in my studio, and, you know, there's one's not better than the other.
Yeah. And in relation to, you know, like finding peace through sound or relaxing, when you're your own performer, you're allowed to be completely cathartic with yourself, mm-hmm. and delve really deep into yourself, see how sounds personally make you feel. If you have lyrics, that can get very personal. Whereas when you're in a band, it can kind of has to get into a bit of a more groupthink mentality, mm-hmm. where there may be like a front leader type person in the band who's writing all the lyrics, but then you're playing their songs. And
right.
It's like, that sort of detachment can get like frustrating for me, because it's like when it's your artistic endeavor, it's like you want to pour your whole self into it. And that's what being a solo experimental musician allows you to do, where, you know, it's great listening to someone who's been performing for 30 plus years, and you can hear their lineage and like how they've changed, you know, from when they were younger to they're older. But it's like, it's as if you're like hearing someone's life story.
Right. Mm. So with your own music and your own compositions, can you talk a little bit about your life story to date, sort of how that's evolved?
Oh, man. I don't know if I want to get into that. That's a lot.
Even just like the types of sounds you're making now, how you started.
Yeah. I, when I first started doing music on my own, it was like, I would say, pretty reactionist, frustrated with music, like mm-hmm. I was saying. And I didn't want to use any instruments I had training in. Mm-hmm. I got flustered. I couldn't touch a guitar for years. I just had to step away from it. So I used a lot of like junky keyboards and things around the house, and I would like put a pan on top of my head and like go under a blanket and like record vocals in my
awesome.
Room, hoping my mom wouldn't hear me.
That's awesome.
And I also had a fear of singing at that time, but I still wanted to get a message across. So I would use samples from movies and TV, and I started compulsively keeping a field recorder mm-hmm. on myself, and I would just be over a friend's house just like recording clips from commercials, and then I would just mash it all together to make a story. So that's how it kind of started.
Cool.
Very piece by piece, you know, taping things together, this weird mashup stuff. And that's when I used to perform as Paid in Puke, which was very just like, I hate music right now. This is how it makes me feel. This is like the worst, like, I just feel the worst, and I just want to throw everything back at everyone. So moved on past that.
But that's totally a phase of sound healing.
Yeah, it's a phase of sound healing where where sound makes you angry.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, people who live in the city or, you know, have to live, say, by a hospital or something,
or
that can give you a
9G. From personal experience. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, sound pollution, right? It's mm-hmm. interesting. It's one of the things that we don't focus on so much, and there's so much of it now. I mean, we don't focus on human rights around sound pollution, but obviously, like, a lot of low-income housing is placed not just by toxic air,
right.
water, and land. It's also really noisy, and this mm-hmm. is something that there's not enough public awareness about, where we encroach on other people's organisms when we're making noise that they don't enjoy.
Yeah,
right.
It's like there needs to be moments of peace, but then at the same time, part of the training I received from Pauline Oliveros in regards to deep listening is sort of finding peace within all the chaos and accepting the sounds within your life and taking them in and not identifying an ambulance as an ambulance and identifying it as just this crazy sound coming through your life and just accept it as that moment and, you know, listen to it and follow through it and just accept it as something that's just a passing moment in your environment and don't, you know, put a definition on it and don't make it personal pretty much.
So that's interesting because then in that case, peace, finding peace in regards to sound doesn't equal silence.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
It sounds like it has a lot in common with maybe what we might call a Buddhist or meditational approach to the world too, not passing judgment on some perception, but just noticing it and letting it pass through you and not being injured by it.
Yeah.
What kind of sounds instill peace for you?
For me, I brought some examples of some music that the more I delved into the experimental scene, I actually found that some of the loudest performers actually would make me feel the calmest. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because some, you know, for a lot of people, the idea of loud sound and abrasive music is really frustrating and it makes them upset and they can't see how that could be calming. But there's a genre within experimental scene called like harsh noise walls, and yeah, it has the word harsh in it, but it's just essentially allowing your body to be hit by an entire wall of sound, where we're so used to listening to music just on little earbuds. But I think the most important aspect of taking in music and sound is how it affects your body and how sound resonates within different parts of your body, where high frequencies typically hit more around your head, more they, you know, sort of get into your brain like little bugs buzzing by your ears. And then, you know, bassier frequencies hit more in the stomach and you know, just sort of have a more notable pump that you can feel. So I brought some examples of some music that, you know, I had listened to, and some of these performers I hadn't seen live, but just even listening to it on a, you know, a really good stereo, you can still understand the effect of it being so loud and so encompassing, for one that it's almost like there's so much going on that you have to relax because you can't think about anything else.
Right.
Do you want to play us something?
Yeah. Oh, sorry, and first I want to say on that note too, just a shout out to non-human animals or non-mammal animals, because mammals hear largely with our ears, but of course our whole body can resonate with vibration as it passes through us. But it's also important for thinking about, you know, letting sound pass through our whole body, that some other species like snakes and actually they're mammals, but they're water mammals, whales, they don't necessarily have the same ear apparatus as a human, or many mammals have ears. They actually quote unquote hear by sensing vibration in other parts of their body. So I kind of, because I love animals, I just wanted to say that too. But also how we listen, like, let's not be so anthropocentric, maybe.
Sure.
Right. So you have a track ready for us?
Yeah, this is an example of one of the first groups that I got really into when I was exploring experimental music, called CCCC, which is Cosmic Coincidence Control Center. And they're from Japan. And one of the first things, I read a brief interview with them that really drew me to their music was with, you know, they're an improv heavy electronics type band, and they really emphasized how much the emotional was more important than playing your instruments right. Just getting the emotional through and presenting that in a live performance, and whatever comes out, that's, you know, you're pouring out your soul, and that's more important than, you know, being super adept at guitar, super adept at, you know, whatever instrument you may be playing. But yeah, this is a good example where it's like so much sounds going on. There's multiple band members and they're all kind of in their, they're, even though it's a band, they're all kind of able to be in their own heads, letting it come through. Nice. So I'll play.
What's this track called?
This track is called Reticular Formation.
Great.
So we'll play a quick clip from that.
Okay.
Awesome. So, hey, everybody, if you're just tuning into the show now, this is Roots Runners Rhizomes. I'm Sarah Faulkner with Lauren Jambroni, and today we're talking to C. Lavender. And Lavender, can you tell us again what that track was that you just played?
That track was Reticular Formation by C.
Awesome. So before we played that track, you mentioned Pauline Oliveros, who you've been interning with. And can you tell us a little bit about how you heard about her and how you came to study with her?
Yeah, Pauline Oliveros is one of, they were referred to as like one of the godmothers of electronic music. I believe she's been producing music since the 1940s, studied at Mills College, was a part of the San Francisco Tape Music Center, and was just a really big part of being a forerunner and blazing a trail for women within experimental and electronic music. And a lot of my interest with Pauline just came through, you know, just people being like, oh, you should know this person, you know? And, mm-hmm. And she just happens to live right here in upstate New York. She's based out of Kingston, New York. So it was just sort of an amazing coincidence when I moved up here that someone said, oh, have you heard of the Deep Listening Institute? I was like, wait, that's right
it's
here.
Destiny.
It's right here. And a lot of Pauline's, deep listening is her term. And it's different. It's forms of listening meditations and things like I mentioned before, you know, just let sounds pass through your life.
We'll let that sound pass through.
Yeah,
our
lives.
I don't know what that was.
Just let it go. Let it go.
Yeah.
Don't try and figure it out. It just came through. And now it's gone. Or is it still going? It's still going somewhere.
Yeah,
and it's transmitting to space right now, and it's going to bounce back.
This is the magic of sound.
It's still going. Yeah, I had the absolute pleasure of getting to go on one of Pauline's deep listening retreats, which she's done them all over the world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just a weekend of, you know, she shows you her listening meditations. And there's moments where, you know, just sitting in silence and how aware you become of your body and the environment, and your central nervous system makes a sound akin to electricity, like a light bulb on it. You can, if you really, really tune in, you can hear your nervous system going
no
and things
way.
Like that.
Did you guys read too? I think last week I read in the paper a story that a laboratory at an American university has built this negative sound room. And basically acoustically when you're in the room, it actually absorbs sound, so that if a person goes in this chamber, there's nothing to distract them from hearing their bodily function sounds. Even, you know, I mean, we can also do this through meditation too, but for an ordinary person not trained, just spontaneously going into this room, I guess, long story short is that the researchers said no one could bear so far to be in the room more than half an hour because they started hallucinating and freaking out because of hearing their blood flowing and their organs moving.
Oh my God, that is amazing.
I know. I did a flotation tank once myself and I could really hear my blood flowing and things, and it was vibrating, you know, the sounds were vibrating through this water, this very dense water, and it's pretty amazing. So Pauline has people working to tune into these sounds we often just don't even think we're hearing
or don't hear.
Or have never heard
Just little things going on in your body, little things going out in the world. And you know, of course when you meditate, it's the world feels so much bigger the longer you do it.
Amazing.
She's just done amazing. She's also a professor at RPI College. So she's, you know, also teaching future generations about how important, you know, how listening is different from just hearing. And
she's performing up at MPAC too in May.
I believe she's performing with Laurie Anderson.
And for folks, MPAC, that's an acronym. I can't remember the exact.
I have it right here.
Awesome.
It's the Experimental Media and Performing Arts Center in Troy. And also, there's the first international conference on deep listening in July 12th through 13th at the same place. So
yeah,
I might as well do some promo for them. They are still taking proposals for the listening conference.
Oh, so great. Deeplistening.org.
Yeah.
Yes. Awesome. With recent album I put together, a lot of times when I perform live, I really don't perform more than 15 or 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of what I learned from Pauline's teachings was sort of, you know, have patience with sound and let things sort of grow and morph, because so much of it is just like you just feel like you're just like throwing as much as you can into the pile at once. And, you know, there's points and there's an ebb and flow to it, but sometimes the most important thing is just sort of letting things draw out, and then you'll actually end up hearing more and getting more out of it.
When you perform live, do you ever prep your audience? Because this is a way of approaching sound and listening that maybe a lot of folks, it's totally radical or new to them. Do you ever say anything before you play?
Yeah, here and there. Yeah, it depends. Sometimes you can kind of tell with an audience, if you're in a basement with asbestos everywhere, everyone probably gets it or they don't care. But I performed at a gallery in Columbus, Ohio when I was on tour, and it seemed like, you know, I knew it was just like a gallery space and I wasn't sure how familiar people would be with everything. So I did just give a little bit of an introduction, and just, you know, sometimes it's nice to just kind of know where people are coming from and what they're trying to do. So yeah, it depends. You sort of just have to feel it out. And sometimes I just get so nervous, I just sort of just want to do it and then like run mm-hmm. back in my car.
Do you prep yourself in any way before you perform? Is there any special meditation or ritual kind of thing you do, or are you just...
It's hard because sometimes you're with a lot of other performers and, you know, you have 10 minutes to set up, you know, mm-hmm. 16 wires mm-hmm. that have to go in all these different places and do all these different things. So usually I will try and take like a little walk once I'm set up or so. But it can be very hard to find peace at a lot of venues before you play. I think I sort of have to thrive on the anxiety mm-hmm. I have beforehand. And I mm-hmm. think that sort of makes for the best performance for me, mm-hmm. having that anxiety behind me. And then uh-huh. a lot of times I'm more, I guess, ritualistic, you would say, after a performance, where sometimes I can't talk to people and I need to meditate on the performance afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little more too about, Pauline's work and like how you came to it, and a little bit more about what deep listening is and how and what draws you to it, to the study of it?
You did a retreat with her. It was your first experience, and then from there what happened?
Yeah, I mean, the retreat definitely changed how I approached music. I'm really interested in Pauline has this book of compositions called Sonic Meditations, and it's like fun meditations. It's all these little, they almost feel like games, but different, you know, it almost feels like a game to me to be like, oh, I just heard a car drive by outside, but I'm just going to think of it as just a whoosh of sound going by. It's like kind of a fun way to sort of take your brain out of how people are typically trained to respond to sounds. So she has a lot of, different methods with it that are both about relaxing but also about accepting and just take it. It really allows you to take in your world a lot better.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. And you're interning with her. What's that like? What's that consist of?
I mean, right now it's your typical internship.
Filing?
Yeah, there's some of that. I also helped publish a book for Pauline on a performance she did in California called The Tower Ring, where an artist had made this giant tower that had what do they call it? Almost like, you know, like double helix spiral stairs
uh-huh.
going throughout it, and there are all these different levels, and at different levels the sound was different.
Mm. Oh, wow.
So she did a performance with that throughout this giant tower, and I put together this art book for her that I think I was given maybe about 180 photos to work with,
mm-hmm.
and I was given a recording of the performance, and it's like, here's the photos, here's the sound from the performance, here's the composition, now make a book that's chronologically in order.
Wow.
And I was not at this performance. so the first couple drafts were rough. Because
it's like a fairy tale task or something. It's really cool.
Yeah, the first ones would be rough because it's like, no, there wasn't conch in that part, and it's all it's just like all in sections, and but it almost felt like she was giving me like a little secret test.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
it's like, okay, now put it in all in order, but there was, you know, a lot of the same instruments, and you know, you could infer some things from the photos, but a lot of the photos would just be, a close-up of one performer.
Wow.
And I just had to listen and, you know, look along with the composition to assemble this book.
Wow.
Yeah, that does sound like a test or a special training in listening in a different way and relating it to the world around you, so.
And do you describe her, like, is it music? Like, how do you talk about it? Like, is it her, is it pieces? Like, I'm curious mm-hmm. basically about how your person, whether that's body, mind, spirit, all of it, is affected by Pauline's work. And I didn't want to call it music, which I almost did, and I'm not sure what the
I'm not the kind of person to be, you know, anti-music or anti-term. You know, it is a lot of semantics and how people present themselves, because Pauline is also she's trained forever as a accordion player.
Oh, wow.
So it's like she's not all electronics, but she does have this accordion that she, you know, runs electronics through and can do, you know, all these fantastic things. So, yeah, it can be either term. But I recently went to something where she played this box set that came out that was, I want to say, yeah, about like 20 or 30 years of her work. And they did a 12-hour listening session of, so it was like her early works. So she's been all over the map with it, between like similar things, like me putting my pot on my head. She would have, you know, like a cardboard tube in a bathroom, and she did a lot of like bathroom recordings for the reverberations and just experimenting and having fun with it.
So how does her work affect you? Or what do you get, like, what do you derive from it for yourself?
A lot of it is her principle of deep listening that attracts me to it. And also the fact that she has been experimenting for so long. She really is a forerunner with a lot of, a lot of musical techniques. And, when she also had this, listening session recently, someone asked her, you know, how did you have all these instruments going at the same time, but all, you know, all the levels were really well? Like, did someone do some post-production mastering, something? And she's like, you know, when I started, there weren't mixing boards. I didn't have a mixing board. And someone's like, well, how did you keep on top of, you know, all your sounds? You're playing multiple instruments on unique instruments at once. And she said, I just listened.
Wow.
So
that's cool.
She has this really amazing energy to her that that's something that comes from meditation, and you're not just going to learn through music school sort of thing.
Do you have a track of hers that we can
listen
to?
I have a little track I can play.
I'm excited.
Then, yeah, and this is cool, and this has a little bit of spoken word with it as well, because she liked a lot of spoken word. So this is Human's Tomb from Roots of the Movement by Pauline Oliveros.
To you, mind, mind, sound, sound, mind, inside sound, sound, inside sound, 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 mind, 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 sound, inside sound, inside, outside, mind. Sound, sound, mind, mind, sound, inside mind, inside mind, 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 sound, 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 mind, inside mind, outside, inside mind, inside, outside, sound, mind your sound, sound your mind. Inside your mind, mind your outside. Outside your mind, mind your inside. Sound your outside, inside your mind. Mind your inside, outside your sound. Your mind inside is outside your sound. Your sound outside is inside your mind. Your sound mind is outside your sound inside. Your mind. Sound is inside your mind, outside. Mind your sound, sound your mind. Mind sound, sound mind. Mind mind. Sound your sound mind, inside, outside. Mind your sound, sound your mind. Mind. Mind your mind sound. Sound. Outside, inside. Sound. 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 Inside your mind, love outside your mind, outside, outside, inside, inside. Your mind is love. I love your mind. Inside, outside, you are sound. Inside, outside, you are sound love. Inside, outside, I love your sound. Mind you, I love you. You are sound mind. Sound. Inside your mind. Sound mind. Outside your sound. Mind to sound. Mind your mind. Sound your sound. Inside your mind. Sound to sound. Outside your sound. Mind to mind. Mind your sound. Sound your mind. Inside your sound. Sound to mind. Outside your mind, mind to sound, mind to sound, sound to your mind, inside your sound mind, sound to sound, outside your mind, sound, mind to mind, mind your sound, sound your mind to mind sound, sound to mind, love your mind, mind your love. Love your sound, sound your love, mind, to sound, mind, sound of love, love, sound of mind, sound, sound, love of love, sound to your love to your sound, mind to your love sound, sound to your love mind. Mind, love, love, mind, love, sound, 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 inside of love, love of inside, inside of mind, mind of inside, mind, outside to love.
Okay, so that was Pauline Oliveris with Humans Too. From Roots of the Movement. Deep Listening founder Pauline Oliveros, another upstate resident located right in Kingston, New York.
Thanks, Lavender. And so now you're going to play us one of your own compositions. Can you tell us a little bit about what you chose to bring to the show today?
Sure. Today I brought, I'll be playing an excerpt from my new album, that came out in January, called Fortitude in Winter Menolf, which is basically like, I'm going to live through winter. I'm going to be okay. but a nicer way to put it. But it was all, it's recordings that took place over 3 years, and they were all made in the month of January. I'm definitely one of those people who definitely gets the winter blues a bit. And had this label that eventually put it out, Ecstatic Peace, you know, give me the offer to put out an album for me about 3 years ago. And then I started working on it, but it was just, it almost felt like I wasn't quite ready yet. And it needed time to mature and grow. And I think it is a good example of where I've come from and where I'm at now as a musician. Just, you know, the first track is the most recent, and then the last track is an older one, and you can just tell through my recording styles and my instruments how I've, you know, sort of grown and changed in different concepts that have entered into my life. And one of the things I was saying before with Pauline Oliveros was she sort of helped teach me patience with music, and my live performances are usually very quick, but the first track on this album is an 18-minute long track, which I never thought I would do, never thought I could do, and keep it interesting. But I'll play just a little bit of it because 18 minutes right now would not be interesting on radio.
well, not
at this time of day, maybe.
Let's tease people anyway.
You want to say a little bit about instruments you're playing and other noises you're making?
Sure. Let's see. Well, this track is called Opening the Gates. And it was mostly bass with running it through various filters.
On the computer, you mean?
I know it was through effects pedals, but different filters that would cut out certain portions of the sound. I typically do use a bass guitar for a lot of my music, but I like to use it in such ways that it doesn't sound like a typical bass guitar. I do like it to take on almost synthesizer-like qualities. So that's what this track shows, and it's a very slow, creeping track that I think was, you know, indirectly inspired by Pauline a lot, and maybe you can hear a little bit of it from the last track we played.
Awesome.
I'll play us now. This is Opening the Gates from my new album Fortitude in Winter Manoth on Ecstatic Peace.
Thank you.
Okay, hi. That was a track from my recent album. I'm C. Lavender, if you just tuned in here on Roots, Runners, and Rhizomes with Sarah and Lauren. That track was called Opening the Gates from my new tape, Fortitude and Winter Manoth. I know over the break there I mentioned to Sarah that it was on tape, and she was in disbelief, and a lot of people are. But
not disbelief, just but, sorrow that I no longer have a device that will play a tape.
Yeah, but there is something, I do like the living quality of cassette tape that happens, where if you do really, really love a tape, one day it won't work so good, and maybe you just sort of have to let it go. And I don't think that happens so much anymore, because everyone just has had their favorite album since they were 16 on their iPod, and it's always there. And
it's magic how the sound goes on the tape. Mm-hmm. I mean, magnetic particles on a piece of, what is it? Is it cellophane or what's the plastic? A synthetic material of some sort has magnetic particles, and then it's exposed to sound vibrations and they stick.
Right. Yeah.
And then you play it and it gets a little degraded over time. It's magic.
Yeah. It's
very organic. It's more organic feeling than an MP3, which is binary digit code, right?
You know? Yeah.
And of course, folks still love vinyl and other playback
recording
menstruums.
Right. Yeah. So,
so you want to tell us a little bit more about that track, or?
Sure. Yeah. I have, if you're interested in the album, you can contact me directly, through my website, clavender.net. And yeah, that track is, that was something I definitely made after going to a deep listening retreat with Pauline Oliveros, and since my recent interest in sound healing and the importance of meditative quality within music. I'm saying too much, and I'm aware of it.
You're doing great.
is pretty close to ohm in my book.
Nice. So,
we're killing each other right now.
I know, we're all sort of in the zone. The thing that drew me to it is I'm really interested in how different frequencies affect one's body, and that track, although you can't tell through an MP3 as much, has all these ups and downs, and there's little hidden high frequencies and a lot of bass holding it together throughout it. I've been researching sound healing a bunch recently, and one of the main people I found out about that I really was interested in was Jonathan Goldman, who seemed to kind of come to sound healing from a similar way I did. I read an interview with him where he was saying he was, you know, playing in a punk band in Boston or some such, and he realized how, you know, doing really aggressive, really punk music can affect an audience emotionally, and you know, people would get rowdy and there'd be bar fights and all this sort of thing. And one day it just sort of clicked in his head, you know, if I can make people really upset with certain types of music, I could possibly also make people very happy with certain types of music. And, you know, not to say it has to be happy, jaunty music, but just acknowledging the power that music and sound can have over a person physically and emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And Jonathan Goldman's also very interested in the power of harmonics, which are sort of a pure tone. So I have a little piece here from his album Ascension Harmonics that we could play. It's an example of that.
Thank you.
So that was Jonathan Goldman with the piece Ascension Harmonics from the 2012 album Ascension Harmonics.
Thanks for bringing in all this really great music.
Yeah.
Jonathan Goldman is one of the main notable sound healers that exists in America right now. And as I was saying before, he just seems to understand the importance of pure sounds and electronics and how those can have such healing qualities, whereas a lot of sound healing is very acoustically based, say with sound bowls, tuning mm-hmm. forks, things of that sort. But I'm such an electronically inclined person that I find his music more relaxing personally. And I think it is something that, you know, you guys have the Wellness Center here in Hudson. And I know personally, if I was getting a massage or Reiki or acupuncture and was hearing that, I think I would be really, really relaxed.
I have played harmonic work a lot more. I went through a major David Hikes phase. I played a lot of David Hikes. And so for folks who don't know who that is, he's... he doesn't call himself a sound healer, but he's definitely coming from a meditative and kind of cross-cultural approach. And he does something called overtone singing, which is in Central Asia, Mongolia, Siberia, Tibet. There's a method, and other cultures use it as well, to play the flute. There's a method where you're doing something called circular singing. And so you're inhaling while you're exhaling, right. Singing. Mm-hmm. And it's very similar to the track we just heard, in that it's almost like human body technology for endless loops of sound. Yeah. And I find it so relaxing, and many of my people I've worked with have found it really transformative and otherworldly. Every now and then a person gets really spooked by it. That's also to...
It's intense to see. I've seen live performers use...
Yeah, me too.
...use that technique, and it's intense to watch.
Yeah, and that's also a good reminder too that, you know, there's no judgment on... what is healing to one person might, you know, one person's medicine is another's poison, I think is an old saying, you know, and definitely the energetics of what we listen to are very personal. And, you know, so there's no universally, this is sound healing therapy, but the harmonics are definitely really magically transporting, I think.
Yeah. So Jonathan Goldman's a good, person to look into if someone's interested in learning more about sound healing. Also, a book I started with was called Sounding the Inner Landscape, subtitled Music as Medicine by Kay Gardner. It was a really great book, and it also talks about certain what notes line up with what chakras, and really goes into some in-depth ideas. And another book I've been enjoying is The Power of Sound by Joshua Leeds, subtitled How to Be Healthy and Productive Using Music and Sound, and, you know, how playing an instrument or listening to music or even just listening to your own voice, how much more powerful it can be to say a mantra out loud versus in your head, and how you can really help yourself with such a simple thing that, you know, everyone has access to.
Mm. Oh, and on that note too, folks who are interested in mantra work, there's a lot of MP3s out there available on the internet now. If you're interested in working with mantras, and you sometimes books, it's hard to know how to pronounce them correctly. So there's one mantra practitioner that I've a lot of people find useful. His name's Thomas Ashley Ferrand, and he has books on different mantras, and mostly Sanskrit, but not all Sanskrit. And
great. That sounds great.
We're almost out of time.
Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you so much.
Our first one of our show.
Yeah. Thank you so much,
again,
Lavender.
So, again, your website, clavender.net.
Yep.
And we're back the fourth Thursday of the month now. So, that's April 25th.
From 2 to 3 p.m. is the new time.
And we think we're going to be speaking with folks from the Icarus Project, hopefully.
Hopefully next month.
As always, we'd love to hear from you for future shows. So you can email us at rootsrunnersrhizomes@gmail.com or find us on Facebook, where we also post the link to this archive show later tonight.
You can also learn more about our local healing practices and projects, the Hudson Wellness Collective, Good Fight Herb Company, Sarah Faulkner Healing Arts, and the Collaborative Healing Arts Clinic. You can go to hudsonwellnesscollective.com for information on all of that. And that's all the time we have for now. Thank you so much, Lavender.
Thanks for having me today.
Thanks listening.